Hello and welcome. This is Sharon bringing you the pantograph for today, Wednesday, May 27th, 2026. We begin our reading on the front page with the bright side. Hope grows for vets and homeless. Lincoln Nonprofit works to fix building, expand services. Since opening its doors in 2024, Hope on Fifth has used the former St. Clara's Manor Nursing Facility on 205th Street to provide housing and supportive services to roughly 50 veterans and unhoused residents in Lincoln. In addition to a furnished room, residents may also receive on-site substance abuse treatment, legal aid services, mental health counseling courtesy of the Springfield Veterans Center, peer support groups, and daily recovery meetings. However, several issues have prevented the nonprofit from fully utilizing the space. Although the building included a commercial kitchen that's available for lease, Hope on Fifth lacks the staffing to provide food service. Plumbing issues also prevent one wing of the facility from being used for additional housing. Kim Turner, board chair for Hope on Fifth, said the organization is trying to raise money for these repairs, but she has been encouraged by the community outreach that made such a variety of support services possible. "We've been really lucky," Turner said. Diane Zosky, emeritus professor from Illinois State University's School of Social Work, said during a forum on innovative housing solutions earlier this year that Hope on Fifth is the Lincoln community's first regional housing and supportive service for veterans and unhoused residents. "Its mission is to promote community welfare and to provide shelter and services to Central Illinois veterans, the homeless, and those at risk of homelessness through offering supportive services and housing on an emergency, temporary, transitional, and permanent basis," Zosky said. Turner said Lincoln College had approached one of Hope on Fifth's veteran advocates in 2022 about donating the building for this purpose. They offered it to him because they knew that he was looking for Central Illinois housing for veterans so that veterans wouldn't have to go so far away for those options, Turner said. "Without such an opportunity in Lincoln, area veterans could have to travel to Bloomington, Springfield, or Peoria to receive specialized services and housing opportunities. Because Hope on Fifth did not have its own board at the time, the property was donated to the Central Illinois Veterans Commission by Lincoln College until such a time that the nonprofit could take charge. However, stakeholders eventually decided that Hope on Fifth should serve all of the city's unhoused residents. Since Lincoln College had acquired the building to provide student housing, Turner said every room of the building had its own furnishings and linens, which cut down on the costs. Logan County initially offered $200,000 to help with building renovations, but authorized another $100,000 to build out a treatment center space for Trillium Place, a Carl Health affiliate that offers addiction recovery and mental health services. The Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs awarded Hope on Fifth with another $100,000 in grant funding for HVAC and plumbing repairs. Hope on Fifth's first client arrived in August 2024, and within 3 months it was handling 20 clients. However, the board chose to take a cautious approach to its growth and decided to cap the number of clients. "None of us knew how to run a shelter that wasn't our job," Turner said. "We know how to refer to a shelter. We know that we have clientele that needs shelter, but we didn't know how to run a shelter, so it's been a learning curve." Since then, there has always been a waiting list of potential clients. Turner said Hope on Fifth's success is thanks to numerous community partners, including Lincoln Memorial Hospital, Community Action Partnership of Central Illinois, and the Salvation Army. Although meal services aren't available, each unit contains a mini fridge and microwave. One of the churches that partners with Hope on Fifth provides a monthly meal to residents, and the Lincoln Logan Food Pantry also delivers food. Additional cookware such as crock pots, air fryers, and coffee makers are also available. Nursing homes have offered wheelchairs, medical equipment, and other resources. Strollers and cradles are also available for residents who may have young children. After the consolidation of one of Heartland Bank's branches, the bank donated furniture for office space that would be available for lease. In addition to treatment and counseling services, Turner said the facility also offers life skills, including a computer literacy class. There have also recreational activities provided, such as yoga. Creative Vets, an art program from Heartland Community College that gives veterans a creative outlet while sharing stories with fellow service members, will also be offered in the basement of the facility in the near future. We want to provide some level of enrichment, too, Turner said. Hope on Fifth has been discussing a capital campaign to raise the necessary funds to open the new wing of the building and perform other improvements. One of the priority capital projects is to repair the parking lot, which has a steep incline on the west side, making it difficult for buses to enter or exit. For more information or to make a donation, visit fb.com/hopeonfifth. Today's Flick Fact question: which is easier to find in Bloomington Normal? A Subway sandwich, a Starbucks coffee, or a State Farm insurance policy? And the answer is, if the sheer numbers matter, State Farm wins. Bloomington Normal has 11 Subway locations and 11 places serving Starbucks coffee, but 13 State Farm agents. And if those offices happen to be full, there's always the massive State Farm corporate headquarters sitting right here in town, probably ready to insure your car before you can even finish that Starbucks latte. Remember that the Pantograph has a commitment to accuracy and wants you to let them know about any issues regarding accuracy or fairness. You can contact them by calling 309-820-3242 or email ojacobs@pantograph.com. From the back pages of the Pantograph, how time flies locally. 100 years ago, on May 27, 1926, business associations of 12 years standing are to be terminated on July 15th when A.E. Moberly and Max Klenner dissolve partnership. The former retires from the mercantile field after 34 years. Mr. Klenner will continue the business at 111 North Main Street. 75 years ago, on May 27, 1951. Memorial Day is my birthday, Chief of Police S. Clyde Hibbins said Monday. I would not like to spend it answering motor accident calls. The chief commented gloomily, too many reckless motorists wreck their own and other people's lives on Memorial Day. 50 years ago, May 27, 1976. Bloomington Water Department employees will vote tomorrow to strike. Bernard Grosso, business agent for Lodge 1000 of the International Association of Machinists, said. He said negotiators for the union and for the city have been unable to reach an agreement over salary. And 25 years ago today, May 27, 2001, on an October night in 1999, the Bloomington City Council was ready to spend $30,000 on an architect and an anticipated $300,000 to renovate a log cabin, Davis Lodge, at Lake Bloomington. Alderman Jim Fruin raised a question. Was this a good value for the city? 19 months later, the city's contractor is putting the final hours into a new Davis Lodge after raising the old one. It could be open in July. The lodge reopening marks a major step in moving from the lackluster summer recreation season of 2000 to a vibrant one in 2001. The other is the condition of the lake itself, full of water versus moderate drought conditions of a year ago. Review: barn becomes dramatic setting. Nomad Theater stages Down on Honeydew Acres. If settling in to watch a production of Our Town or Oklahoma, you might start to imagine yourself hearing chicks chirping or goats bleating. But if you're settling in to watch Nomad Theater's Down on Honeydew Acres, the sound of nature are real. With the tagline, Theater That Moves, Nomad Theater performs site-specific immersive productions around town rather than on a traditional stage. They began in 2019, co-founded by Connie Blick and Kristen Monson, as a creative project, and now they are now a full-fledged nonprofit organization. Performing in a bar or a warehouse or a courtroom, Nomad solicits original play submissions centered around these themes. This time, the setting is a real farm in Northwest Normal, with the play expertly directed by Chris Turvin. Be sure to arrive early because that is your chance to explore, and you'll want to explore this unique setting. Visit with the goats, alpacas, and chickens, complete with the sounds of banjo, violin, and guitar music from the Georgia Boys to round out the ambiance. Grab a drink or a treat from Straight Up Sips, and then, when summoned by a bell, take your seat in the cozy barn. Cozy is one of the best words to describe the experience, but also funny, thought-provoking, surprising, and just outright silly. The show features 8 short plays, ranging from balletic alpacas trying to figure out what happens to their sheared hair in Alpaca Francus by Toby Inunu, to a mouse complaining about the footman job Cinderella's fairy godmother has just assigned him, in Animals Switching into Servants in a Barn by Matt Hanf. Sure, the plays were written, set in barns, but they don't let the fact that they are also literally being performed in a barn fool you. This is still very much a theatrical production. There are swift scene changes, well-chosen sound effects and music, and barn doors sliding as curtains for entrances and exits. In CSI EIEIO by Frank J. Shima, lighting cues add much to the CSI investigation, including blue light flashlights to look for evidence. I'll take an opportunity to see a show on Broadway, but you also might as well bring binoculars. That is not the case with Down on Honeydew Acres. I could see the writing on the messenger's scroll, props by Martha Smith, actual stitches on a cow suit, costumes by Ashley Ray Lynn, and every detail of the actors' facial expressions. With only three rows of chairs lining both sides of the playing space, there is not a bad seat in the house. I don't want to downplay the challenges the cast and crew might have faced while staging theater in such a non-traditional location, and often, I assume, with little rehearsal time in the performance space itself. Nonetheless, Nomad Theater has site-specific theater down to a science or a fine art. If you'd like to go, again, this play is called Down on Honeydew Acres. It will take place at Honeydew Acres Farm, 3413 West Northtown Road in Normal. The show is at 7:30 p.m., May 29th and 30th, and 2 p.m., May 24th and 31st. The runtime is about 2 hours, including a 15-minute intermission. Tickets range from $17 to $50 and can be purchased by visiting nomadtheater.org. You can volunteer and make a difference at the Special Olympics Summer Games, which will take place June 12th through 14th in Bloomington Normal. To learn more and register, visit soill.org/volunteers. Brews at the Zoo at the Miller Park Zoo, Saturday, June 13th, from 3 to 7 p.m. Beer, food, and animals. Visit mpzs.org for more information or to purchase tickets. Bloomington's 5-day forecast, it will be very warm today with a mix of clouds and sun. You can expect 4 to 8 hours of sunshine, with average relative humidity of 50% and a high temperature of 86 degrees. This evening, there is a chance of thunderstorms in spots. That chance of precipitation is 55%, with average relative humidity of 65% and a low temperature of 60 degrees. Tomorrow, Thursday, it will be breezy in the morning. Shifting clouds and sun throughout the day. Temperatures between 84 and 56 degrees. Friday, there will be high, thin clouds. Temperatures between 80 and 57 degrees. On Saturday, you can expect, again, some sunshine, some clouds. It will be breezy in the afternoon. Temperatures between 81 and 55 degrees, and Sunday will be a really nice day with a mix of clouds and sun, the high temperature 79 and the low 53. Regarding today's pollen counts, you'll find that grass is moderate, trees are high, there is no weed pollen, and mold is low. Jamie Mollant is a financial educator for Bond, Clinton, Jefferson, Marion, and Washington counties. She provides financial education to the local community and offers today's column for Healthy Families, Teach Kids How to Handle Money. Children and youth receive financial education both in school and outside of school. In school settings, financial concepts may be taught through mathematics courses or in some cases through standalone personal finance classes. Outside of school, children often learn about money through parents and family members, as well as through their own lived experiences. Because financial habits form early, learning about finance at a young age can have significant long-term benefits. Early financial education can help youth avoid costly financial mistakes, build confidence in financial decision-making, understand the value of patience and planning, and develop resilience when facing unexpected expenses. Gaining an understanding of financial outcomes before adulthood helps better prepare youth for real-world financial responsibilities. Recognizing the importance of these skills, a recent Illinois House bill proposes requiring a standalone financial literacy course in grade 11 or 12 as part of the high school graduation requirements. According to Bill HB 5533, financial literacy is essential for students to make informed financial planning decisions. And research has shown that a financial literacy course is significantly more effective if taught as a separate course rather than embedded in another course. If passed, the proposed requirement would take effect for students entering ninth grade in the 2029 through 2030 academic year. Personal finance is a critical life skill. And what individuals learn about money at a young age can have lasting impact. When young adults enter the workforce with limited knowledge of personal finance, they may be more likely to make poor financial decisions. Providing youth with a strong foundation in how money works in everyday life before adulthood can help foster responsible financial behaviors and informed decision-making. Again, this is from the Illinois General Assembly, House Bill 5533. For more information, you can visit www.ilga.gov. Illinois soybeans going far afield. Inside a factory on Chicago's north side, the smell of simmering soybeans drifts through the air. On a typical day, I use 4,000 pounds of dry beans, Jenny Yang said. She and her team grind, cook, and press thousands of pounds of soybeans into silky tofu and rich soy milk. She still makes it the same way, no preservatives and made mostly by hand, said Bob Lum, a longtime friend of Yang who helps with the business. Her company, Phoenix Bean, has been making tofu and soy milk this way since she bought it in 2006. It is one of the few businesses in the state that uses Illinois food-grade non-GMO or non-genetically modified organism soybeans sourced directly from local farms like Janie's Mill in Ashcombe. I know them since back in the day, like at least 10 to 15 years, Yang said. This is a good, very good partnership. Illinois grows more soybeans than any other state, harvesting more than 639 million bushels in 2025, well ahead of Iowa's 595 million bushels and Minnesota's 371 million bushels. Lawmakers designated the soybean as the official state bean in 2025, effective January 1st, 2026. Decatur has been called the soybean capital of the world. But almost none of those millions of bushels end up as food on Illinois plates. According to the Illinois Soybean Association, 60% of soybeans grown in the state are exported. Most of the remaining 40% are processed as animal feed, leaving the state reliant on imports for its soy food. 95% of food consumed in the state of Illinois is imported. If there were any type of natural disaster, Illinois only has enough food to last us for 3 days. In 2025, with a trade war freezing exports to China, one of the biggest buyers of Illinois soybeans, Governor J.B. Pritzker, declared an agricultural export crisis on October 29th and directed state agencies to enhance domestic markets. For farmers and food producers, the pressure has made the need for local infrastructure more urgent than ever, raising the question of whether more of Illinois' crops, especially soybeans, can finally start feeding more Illinoisans. Harper said more effort and massive investment is needed. She sponsored the Local Food Infrastructure Grant Program, which provides local farmers with small grants for processing, storage, and distribution. She worked closely with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, a policy advocate for local food and farm communities, to build legislative momentum. "We have some of the best soil, the best farmland," Harper said, "no matter where you are, urban, suburban, rural, we need to be producing more food in our state." She described local food production as a win-win that will help create jobs and generate revenue. Her downstate colleague, Representative Charlie Meyer, representative from Oakville, a farmer himself who raises about 1,000 acres of soybeans every year, noted that farmers follow price signals. "We are very conservative and we do everything the same," Meyer said. "But at the same time, we must be able to change everything in a drop of a second, and we will go wherever the markets are." For Illinois farmers, the math is brutal. Food-grade soybeans require older genetics that yield 10 to 15 fewer bushels per acre. Jeff O'Connor, an Illinois farmer who's grown food-grade soybeans, said his commodity soybeans average in the low 70s bushels per acre last year. His food-grade soybeans, which use varieties more than a decade old, yield in the low 60s. Weed control is another issue. Unlike commodity soy, which allows for certain herbicides, food-grade soybeans are non-GMO, so farmers can't use any of those chemicals. Furthermore, their fields often looked unkept. "You can't do that again," one landowner told O'Connor after a season of raising food-grade soybeans. "I don't care if we made a little more money, the fields looked terrible." I'll take a short break now and then return with the remainder of this article and the second half of the pantograph for Wednesday, May 27th, 2026. Please stay tuned.